welcome back to Bella Figura, the tradition of living beautifully. I'm your host, Dolores Alfieri Taranto. On this show, we talk spirituality for the rest of us with a focus on the art of beautifying all aspects of our lives using heritage, culture, beauty by hand, ancestral traditions, and old world style to do so. Hey folks, welcome back. Happy New Year. This is the week where we're supposed to be getting ourselves back up on our horses. was a very long and distracting holiday season, but I guess that is kind of the point. So I am still definitely, I'm not even on the horse. I'm kind of carrying my saddle toward the horse. but it's good to get back on the mic here, and it's good to get back to you with another wonderful show. My guest today is Angela Ferraro Fanning, and she is the founder of Axe and Root Homestead. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about her in a second here. Before we jump in, I wanted to remind you that I have opened my Etsy shop. And if you like what you hear here on the podcast, and if you follow me on Instagram as well, my handle is at Dolores_Alfieri_Taranto. I think you'll really like what I'm featuring in the Etsy shop, which includes a lot of the photographs I post on Instagram, some vintage items, and some jewelry that aligns with the motto of this podcast: beauty by hand, old world style, and ancestral traditions. So I will link to my shop in the show notes. You can check it out by visiting etsy.com/shop/Bella Figura store. And how about we take a few minutes to talk about wine? So far this season, where the theme is home, you have heard me talk about my beloved dry farm wines. Have you tried it yet? I know that some of you have, and I want to thank you for using my link, and I want to thank you for trusting my recommendation. I know that you're really enjoying these wines, and those of you who have not tried them yet, I want to encourage you to use the link created specifically for Bella Figura listeners, which is dryfarmwines.com/Bella Figura, to try these organic, biodynamic, clean wines grown in an old world way. Dry Farm Wines is the distributor. They source these gorgeous wines from small family vineyards throughout the world, many of them from Europe, from Italy, from France, some of my favorite places, and they deliver them every month or every 2 months or every 3 months, or you can even get a one-time delivery if you email them and request whatever combination you want: rosé, bubbly, reds, whites. You can really mix it up, and they deliver them right to your door. These are wines grown in the way that align with your values. And with less than 1 gram of sugar in every single bottle, you are not derailing all the hard work you put in to eat well, to live well, to take care of your body. And of course, you're not derailing your belief in taking care of the earth and doing things in a slow, intentional way, because the people who grow the grapes that go into this wine take care of the earth they grow them on. So please check out Dry Farm Wines. Use my link, dryfarmwines.com/Bella Figura. I will also link to that in the show notes. And if you use the link, you will get a bottle of wine for just 1 penny in your first order. I love these wines. I have been getting Dry Farms delivered to me for several years now. I am thrilled to be partnering with them. I'm sharing them with you because I really believe in the mission behind the company and because the wines are really delicious. And having good wine on your table after you've put so much effort into cooking good food is an absolute must. The wines that we buy from the supermarket or from the liquor store are loaded with additives, toxins, sugar, so much refined sugar. Those are not wines made the way wine should be made. But the wines that Dry Farm Wines will send to you, those are. So let's get back to the basics, back to what we believe in, and drink wine that aligns with our values. Use the link dryfarmwines.com/bellafigura to get your penny bottle in your first order. All right, now let's jump into this episode, but I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about my wonderful guest, Angela Ferraro Fanning. She is an author and the founder of Axe and Root Homestead, a 6-acre farm in central New Jersey. She began homesteading in 2012 after suffering postpartum depression with her first child. Unhappy in the graphic design business she'd worked in for over a decade, she longed to be outdoors, aligning her lifestyle with the seasons and with nature. She started growing and preserving as much of her own homegrown produce as possible, and the homestead quickly grew from a home garden to a farm bustling with Clydesdales, geese, and duck for eggs, an apiary with 10 beehives, sheep, and a small orchard. She taps her own trees for maple syrup, creates her own soap, and has even recently added a hobby vineyard for homemade wine. Very smart, Angela. She is the co-author of The Harvest Table, a collection of seasonal plant-based recipes inspired by the home garden, as well as author of the Little Homesteader series. She's co-host of the Definitely Not Simple Life podcast. Angela is an interesting guest to add into our mix here for the theme of home. She's not the first homesteader I've spoken to this season, but she's definitely the first one with a homestead on the East Coast in the tri-state area in my neck of the woods. So we do dive into that, and that was a treat for me. She is also the first vegetarian homesteader that I've had on so far this season, and I think that that's really an interesting angle as well. And of course, we talk about why she decided to build her homestead based on those values and the very biodynamic way that she does this. Okay, let's slide right into this conversation here with Angela Ferraro Fanning. Angela, welcome to Bella Figura.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you. Looking forward to speaking with you about so many things, but one really interesting thing is this season's theme is home. So I have had a lot of, or several, I should say, homesteaders on already, but you are the first who's in my neck of the woods. Your homestead's in New Jersey on the East Coast. And I'm like, this is kind of a different level of excitement for me because although Jersey is like, especially Central Jersey, Southern Jersey, they're well known for their farms, at least around here. I don't know, like throughout the country, you also just don't think, like when you think homesteading, you don't necessarily think the tri-state area.
For sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is exciting. So before we jump into talking about that, I love to ask my guests to tell me a little bit about their roots and the people that they come from.
Yeah, sure. On that note, I don't come from a farming family. I don't come from a line of homesteaders. I'm completely first generation and self-taught, but I do come from an Italian-American family where we place a high importance and value on quality food and quality ingredients. And all of our traditions, no matter whether it's a holiday or just a Sunday, or just catching up around the table or the kitchen island, there's always food present and it's always part of the experience. So for as long as I can remember, I've been sampling wine with my family as a child, you know, during festive occasions, they'd give me little sips. I've been experiencing my culture and my family's recipes through all of these festivities. So for me, transitioning from just sort of somebody who's passionate about food into someone who wants to grow their own ingredients sort of was a natural progression. I wanted to have access to the best basil that I could find and make homemade pizza with it or fresh salad. And I'm growing my own arugula, you know? So it all started with baby steps with fresh ingredients and a desire for truly locally sourced produce. And it kind of expanded from there. My family is not here on the East Coast. They're in the Midwest, predominantly in Nebraska, in Omaha, and Lincoln, and they have had a lot of restaurants. We're talking, they had discos, Italian fine dining, there's casual pizza places. It is just in my family's blood to make and serve food. And this is sort of my spinoff, my tangent. I do it a little differently. I don't have a restaurant, but I sure invite people over here to eat everything that I cook and grow. So it's sort of, it falls in line, you know?
Absolutely. They've kind of like created a different monster in you.
Yes, they did. I can't stop eating.
Well, you know, my listeners are probably smiling right now because they know very well that I come from a very similar background, minus the Midwest, right? Swap that for the East Coast. But, and so they know we, you know, and they like the show for that reason. They really can understand and resonate with this idea that food actually matters that much, that you're willing to kind of restructure your whole life and start a homestead so that you can cook with the best ingredients.
Absolutely. You know, I'm not trained as a chef. I didn't go to culinary school or anything. I'm just very passionate about local, living in alignment with the seasons and sourcing my food as such. And I just want to be outside with my family. I kind of went through this whole transition from running my graphic design business and being in the rat race and meeting deadlines to stopping and saying, hey, look, this doesn't suit me anymore. Now I have a child. I was going through postpartum depression and I just decided I want to be outside. I want to have more of a connection with nature and my surroundings. I want to grow my own food and not be so reliant on the food system. You know, there's so many recalls. There's a lot of issues with salmonella and you could go on and on.
That's absolutely right.
I just wanted to take a step back, be more self-sufficient and experience where my food came from firsthand.
Yeah. So well said. There's a lot in there, that I want to touch on. You mentioned also the recalls and the salmonella. I mean, I just read a story recently that they recalled a bunch of onions, across the country. I'm like checking my onions. Thankfully I try to buy, you know, like organic and from local, from farms. So I don't usually worry about that, but just the idea in general that you have to worry about salmonella on your onions continues to blow my mind. It's just, it's like a symptom of something horribly wrong in our system.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people say to me when they hear that I grow my own food and we use compost, which when you look at the science of it, compost is not the same as manure. It's manure that's been composted, then turns into soil. It's earth. You're putting it on the garden. And people say, oh my God, you know, how can you eat that? Well, it's actually cleaner than some of the food that's on the grocery store shelves. Not a lot of it. You know, I'm not out here to do some sort of a scare tactic or anything like that by any means. Right. But we can look and see that there are some issues with some of the hygiene in the grocery stores. And so does it bother me? Does it scare me to grow my own food? Absolutely not. I've been doing it for a decade. And you do take certain measures and certain steps. Wash your produce. You know, you're not putting raw manure piles where it's supposed to be composting and breaking down next to your garden. So when it rains, you have runoff. Mm-hmm. There are simple things that you can do to sort of practice food safety at home, especially when it comes to preservation.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. That's a whole other subject and a very good one. Mm-hmm. Before we keep going, I'm wondering, what does your family think about your lifestyle choice?
Well, in the beginning, it was just another thing that their oldest hippie daughter was taking on. My dad lovingly calls me a hippie. You know, I don't take offense to that by any means. They thought that it was just another tree hugger action on my part.
So they've seen you do things like this before.
Yeah, I'm very passionate about the environment and trying to do my part and that sort of thing. They were humored by it. And I think the other thing that was a little bit different for them is that I truly, honestly have never liked going camping. I didn't like spending time in the great outdoors, hated bees, ticks, wasps, all those things. So for me, all of a sudden to go for this and dive in deep and live a life in alignment with the outdoors and the seasons and being in the dirt and in the muck and bugs, I think they thought I lost it. Honestly, I think they thought I lost it. Now they're humored, you know, they're humored by it. And I think they see how passionate I am. And when they come here, it is, it's infectious for them. They get very excited. They get inspired. They have a garden now where they didn't before.
Oh, wow.
And they see how passionate I am about doing things from scratch, and they're starting to do a lot of the same. So that's one thing that I'm really proud of, is it's like, I can sort of teach them. I can give something to them.
Yeah.
You know?
You're inspiring them. You're inspiring
them. I
hope
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you, second generation? Like which part of your family, came to America from Italy?
Sure. So I'm third generation. So my dad's parents, they were born here in the US. Their parents came over. They spoke Italian in the home, but they did not teach it to my dad and his siblings. Right. In the Midwest. Yeah. In the Midwest at that particular time, unfortunately, it was not something to be proud of to be Italian. So they did not teach their children how to speak it. My dad remembers a lot of the gatherings, a lot of times when he was working at the restaurants, you know, overhearing his parents, his aunts, his uncles speaking to each other in fluent Italian. But that is something that he was never able to do.
It's a shame. We hear that. I hear that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Because how was it on the East Coast for that generation?
It's pretty similar. Yeah. Pretty similar. You might get more people who can understand it just from hearing it, but sure. Like being surrounded it, because they would have been like in enclaves, right? Italian enclaves, but they can't speak it anymore,
sure.
You know, or never could. And that was the same thing at home. They would speak it, but the parents, they were, you know, kind of ashamed in a way and wanted their kids mm-hmm. to be seen as American.
Yes.
So language is so intimately connected, right, to culture and your roots that, well, I mean, the quickest way to kind of uproot is to just cut that out, unfortunately.
Agreed. It's really unfortunate. You know, my dad, he's very darkly skinned. I mean, in the summertime, he gets tan within like a day, and it's going to take me all summer long to get that sort of tan that he has. But, you know, he was singled out for mm-hmm. the shade of his skin, as right. his siblings were. And he remembers very painful experiences about that with other kids in the neighborhood. So I think you're absolutely right. It was trying to eliminate as many differences as possible rather than celebrate them, which is so unfortunate.
That's exactly right. Yep. That's exactly right. And it leaves like a hole, a wound in people's spirits and souls. Like even now, you know, so I can talk to like a third generation Italian American mm-hmm. or second generation. And my husband is one, he's third generation, and he doesn't speak any Italian or understand any of it. And he very much feels like this hole inside of him because he doesn't have that, which I find amazing. So many generations later that you can still kind of feel that way. Like I'm missing something.
Yeah, I definitely feel, well, and it goes even a little bit deeper for me, because my grandmother, who my dad's mother, who's Italian, Sicilian, she died 2 years before I was born. So I never got to meet her. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of crazy. I ended up being born on her birthday. So they gave me her middle name and that sort of thing. Oh, nice. And I have all of her handmade recipes for her liqueurs, you know, and obviously her sauces that we all inherit. But it goes a little deeper. I would have loved to have the experience that so many people get with their grandparent, where they have something so culturally rich and they can remember doing things in the kitchen together or chatting about their heritage. And so I have that through my dad and, you know, my grandfather a little bit, but I would give anything to have that experience with her. That would, especially now that I'm homesteading, you know, she canned sauces. She did so many of the things that I do. That would have been pretty awesome.
I really resonate with that because I had the same experience. I did know my paternal grandmother, but she died when I was about, I would say like 17 or so. And she lived in Italy all of my life. So, you know, we would see her when she came here, when we went there, but my maternal grandmother, who I'm named after, died before I was born. And I'm like the perfect candidate for a close nonna relationship. Like I would be, you know, I really love that. I mean, I love to hear the stories. I love, you know, like you, I would have been in there cooking with her, teach me these recipes, teach me your ways, teach me the wisdom. And it does, it pains me too. I do get that from my mother. I do get a lot of that from her. She had me a little bit later in life. So she's a little bit older and, you know, she has grandkids. So I kind of like milk it. And then her, I try to milk it as best I can. And then her sister who passed away about a year ago was actually 20 years older than her. And she, big gap. And she lived in Italy as well. But when we used to go to Italy, I always felt like she was the grandmother I'd never known.
Sure. She and, filled you know, that role for you.
She did. And I really got like she would make me like the big bowls of spaghetti and I would sit like outside her little apartment and in the patio and I would eat and she'd bring me wine. It was like, this must be what it feels like to have a nonna. And then she would tell me all the stories that I wanted to know that my mom actually didn't know. She would tell me, you know, about my grandmother and even like told me crazy stories that about like a sibling who had been born, who passed away as a baby. Like my mom didn't even know a lot of these things. So I really feel that. And I also just want to add to that. Have you ever thought that perhaps like you are into these things because of your grandmother, even though you've not met her? Have you ever made that?
It's interesting. No, yeah, I definitely feel there's, for lack of a better word, there's sort of a guardian angel experience happening here. Yeah. You know, I feel sort of guided into doing some of these things, obviously to a different degree than I think that she did or ever was maybe able to do.
Sure.
But it also gives me a way to sort of be connected to her without ever having met her. Like I make her cookies, you know, her biscotti around Christmas time, or if I'm making one of her liqueurs or something, I see her handwriting and I know she used that as her recipe. And that's just kind of a nice, it's an opportunity for connection that I never got from the physical sense.
I totally,
if that makes sense.
It makes so much sense. And I think it's really beautiful. I think it's like the most that any of us can ask for, you know, like with being mothers, right? And your descendants, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll meet any of them. I don't know how many I will meet. And it's kind of the most we can hope for that even those who do not meet you, right? Still feel you around. And,
right.
You know, still feel that connection. It's beautiful.
It's interesting. Yeah, it is.
So how did New Jersey become home? Speaking of the theme of home.
Sure. So I've bounced around the Midwest quite a bit. My family, my immediate family, my dad and my mom, they live in Minnesota currently. And I was from the Twin Cities when I left. The last place I lived was Minneapolis, St. Paul. My husband and I really liked New York. I was married in Central Park. I'd gone to art school, so there was a lot of opportunity for travel with the university to do art trips over spring break to the city. And any chance I had, you know, if we had a chunk of days off, we'd be on a plane and coming out to New York because we just loved the energy so much. And the goal was to move out this way and potentially live here. Well, then I got pregnant with my first child and my husband got a job in New Jersey. But I was in my third trimester when we moved and he's like, we cannot have you living in the city and me working in New Jersey and you go into labor. It's not going to work. And I was like, are you kidding me? So we ended up, you know, we had to get an apartment while we house hunted in New Jersey. And at that point, I mean, I was only a year away from homesteading and it still wasn't on my radar. I had no idea, you know, and it's just funny when you look back and see, but we found an apartment. We got a house, which had 3/4 acre. I had the baby while we were in the apartment. We moved to the house and all of a sudden it was, hey, my life needs to look totally different. So we go to the city, you know, whenever we want access to it, we're there. We still love it.
Sure.
But this, our surroundings, the nature, the country, it suits us so much better for this lifestyle where we're at with our kids at this point in time.
Yeah, that makes sense. How many children do you have?
I have 2 boys.
You have 2 boys. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I like what you just said there, that you were only a year away from homesteading, but it wasn't even on your radar.
No.
I think that's so wild. I love that because I think that so many of us have this pressure on ourselves. I don't know. Or like this idea that we can't come to anything new if it wasn't always part of our lives or something like that, you know, like to kind of make this, right? Like this transformation, like, well, I've never done that before, or, you know, that's not me, but sometimes it's there, maybe it's latent in different ways. And then life just gives you this window and you either go through it or you don't.
Absolutely. And there is a bit of a leap of faith involved. And there's also, you know, as adults, we get, I think a lot of adults, we get very nervous about being criticized or making a fool of ourselves. We don't want to fail. We don't want to make mistakes. And so to take on an entirely new lifestyle, you know, most farmers, most homesteaders have some sort of experience with that they've gained as a child. They grew up with it in some capacity. Even riding horses. I own horses now, and I never took lessons as a child because it just wasn't in the budget for my family. Mm. So I took a handful of trail rides with my dad whenever we could. And as an adult, I gave myself lessons. But coming into farming, homesteading, and even horse ownership later in life than so many people, you do open yourself up to a little bit of criticism, and you have to kind of just develop a thick skin and know that this is what you really want to do. I remember when I was in college, there was a woman there who was 50 and she couldn't afford to go to college right after high school, like so many people do. I remember her saying that she was so thankful that she had finally been able to afford to go to college because she knew if she had gone when she was younger, she wouldn't appreciate it the same way as she did now that she was older. And that always stuck with me. I don't know if I grew up in a farming family, if I'd be where I am, or if I would have the appreciation that I do for this lifestyle. So in a way, it is a blessing because I chose it. You know, I wasn't just born into it.
Yeah, that's really well said. And it makes a lot of sense. But also, I, you know, what you said in the beginning, we started talking, which is there's so many elements from your upbringing that still come to play here. It's just
right. Foreshadowing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Foreshadowing. I like that. So let's talk a little bit about your homestead and how it came about. We just talked about a year before this starts to happen, but now you describe yourself as a quote, plant-based permaculture homesteader.
I do.
So if you could tell the listeners, what does that mean exactly? How did that come about that was going to be what you were going to be homesteading and what it looks like?
Sure. So we'll start at the beginning, plant-based. I am vegetarian. I do not eat meat and neither does my husband. It's not for political reasons. It's just that my husband wasn't feeling good when he ate meat. He felt very weighed down and heavy and he wanted to transition into eating more vegetables. And I noticed the same thing. I just felt lighter and I felt better. And so it just became a pattern in our weekly meal ritual. Now that I have animals and I keep animals, I don't think I could bring myself to process one to eat it. That's not to say that I care if anybody else does. It's just that for me, I don't think I could do it. And so I don't. And so because I like to grow as much of my own food as I can, I don't eat meat. So that's the plant-based part. As for the permaculture piece, permaculture is short for permanent agriculture. So the idea is that you're working in alignment and sort of in mimicry of Mother Nature. If we look outside at a tree in nature, Mother Nature doesn't leave the ground perfectly clear underneath the apple tree, for example, and it's just grass and no weeds and nothing else. Mother Nature fills it up and usually fills it up with things that help to assist the tree to grow and be more pest resistant, get the vitamins and nutrition that it needs. So that's what I do. In my orchards, I companion plant the same way Mother Nature would put plants around that tree. I do the same thing to help give the tree new nutrients, to fortify it and give it a better defense system against pests, to attract pollinators. And those are also things I don't have to plant every year. They're permanent. They come back every year. They're perennials. And so by doing things like this in every facet, you know, we don't bring animals to the homestead because they're cute. I bring them because they serve a purpose. The horses, they help me plow. Their manure is composted. The ducks give us eggs, sure, but they eat a lot of the slugs and pests off of the garden crops. The bees, they don't just give honey, they help to pollinate all of the crops and the orchard trees that are in the area. I have guardian geese that help to fertilize and weed down the pastures, but simultaneously they help to guard the ducks from hawks and crane. So everything serves then more than one purpose. It's a stacked function system that mimics an ecosystem. So that's really what the farm is here.
How did you learn all of that?
Well,
I mean, how did you,
that's a good question.
You know, unfortunately, we don't live in a society anymore where this is common knowledge. This idea, you know, the way nature works and the way it works symbiotically with itself, let's say. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like
totally.
The, you know, the way you plant a certain crop with another crop, or the way the ducks right. will eat this, or chickens will eat your ticks, et cetera. We don't really have that wisdom anymore.
First thing is, I've always been a bookworm. I've always just liked reading in general, whether it be fiction or nonfiction. So for me to pick up a book about companion planting or gardening is just very natural. I learn very well from reading. But the other thing is, when you experience anything like growing a tomato plant and you plant that first seed and it grows, it's inevitable you're going to get a pest. So you start looking up, how do I get rid of this bug or this disease on my tomato plant? Right. And you might look up something you could spray on it. Or if you're organic, like I am, you would say, oh, there's preventative measures. I can companion plant. There's things that help the tomato plant grow. Oh, hey, the tomato plant also helps that thing grow. It becomes sort of this baby step approach to creating a lifestyle.
I get it. You know, it's the idea that you learn by doing.
Yes.
We touched on this a little bit earlier. People think that they have to know everything before they get started. And like right. you said, maybe it's because we don't want to look foolish or we don't want to be mm-hmm. criticized, but you really need to have a tough skin and to just accept that, like, I am an amateur right now and I might be an amateur right. for the rest of my life, but I'm learning and that's okay. Like, I'm going to mess up, but I'm going to learn. People want to kind of just have this knowledge beforehand, but you really have to dive in. And Absolutely. Start doing it. That's it. With everything. I mean, with everything
Absolutely.
You do.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And share those failures or those mistakes, because it normalizes it. And it is normal, right? We right. don't like to share those parts, especially on social media. There's a big homesteading community on Instagram and on social media right now. And the women that I started the podcast with, we are all about authenticity and sharing all of it, because there are parts of homesteading that suck. Right? We only see the pretty pictures. There's parts of it that just really suck and that you hate and you dread. Cleaning the duck coop is one of them. Mm. It's important to share all of the bad along with the good. That is what is real.
Right. Well, there's a penchant to kind of romanticize, you know, anything having to do with farming and mm-hmm. and that way of life. But really, mm-hmm. yeah, it's like real work. I mean, hence the title of your podcast is the Definitely Not Simple Life podcast. Mm-hmm. Yep. There's this idea that it's the simple life. And of course, what people mean is it's not the rat race, which I think most of us right. just want to get away from. So, you know, it becomes appealing, but it's work. It's kind of actually nonstop work, because if you don't go out and take care of your animals and your vegetables, you know, they don't live.
Right. And I think it's a bit of a jolt for people, because we live in a society of instant gratification. That is not what homesteading is. Nothing in homesteading is instant gratification. Mm. It is all a journey, whether it be learning and gaining knowledge and experience, or from the time you planted the seed from that tomato plant to when you actually harvest the fruit. Every single facet of homesteading is meant to be a long-winded experience. It is not instant, ever.
Is that part of its appeal for you?
I think I had to learn to appreciate that by yeah. nature. I'm a very impatient person. Homesteading and children have brought out the patience in me I didn't know I had.
I can understand that. I can. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have no choice. You can't just be like right. going around screaming at them all the time, or right. screaming at your tomato plants, demanding they grow faster.
Right. And you have to let go of control, you know, it's not up to you. And I think yeah. that's actually a really good quality to have.
Well, I wonder if more of us did that, you know, like did this kind of work, even if it's just, I don't know, potted tomato plants on the balcony, mm-hmm. you know, if more of us were a little more connected to how we eat and to how we get our food, that, you know, maybe this kind of like Amazon syndrome that we are all dealing with of like, I want it now, I can get it now. Would mm-hmm. be lessened, you know? I think it's kind of a healing approach that a lot of us need.
It's a good point. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Which is part of why I wanted to do this season focusing on home, and why I wanted to talk to so many of the homesteaders that I've been following on Instagram, for instance, as you just mentioned. Because yeah. clearly there's a need for it and there's an attraction, you know, which is something that I wanted to talk to you about. But before we do, how mm-hmm. how did it all start? I mean, if you went from like, I love New York City to,
yeah,
you know, I'm having a baby to you have ducks now and horses and this whole farm, and it's what you're doing for a living as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah. writing about it.
Yeah. And writing about it. Exactly. I mean, it's your yep. whole platform. So how did that come about?
The first step was I was actually on a flight out to Vegas to visit my mother-in-law. Sean, my husband, was with me. We had our one son at the time. And I just had this, you know, I was really just struggling with this website that I was designing and working on. The client was insane. And I just looked at him and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. This isn't making me happy. And I was very fortunate to have a partner who basically said, okay, then what do you want to do? Like, how do we fix this? And I said, I want to grow my own food. I at least knew that. And I said, I know it's not going to be an even trade-off, but what if I quit my job or, you know, sort of drip off some of the clients slowly at a time. And I start trading in my paycheck for the grocery bill, you know, so I basically say, okay, we're going to grow as much of our produce as we can. I learned to preserve it. It's a lot of money to pay for organic groceries every week. You know, what if I do that? He was supportive and he knew that I had already had a lot of experience with gardening. So that's what I did. We were on 3/4 of an acre at a time. At the time, I put in a raised bed vegetable garden, just a few beds. But because the property was so small and it was also on a floodplain, it was tricky. And I had to learn to grow up on trellises, pots and containers, and not out like we think of when we think of agriculture. Wow, so it was all about growing upwards. And it was also about replacing decorative and ornamental bushes with things like cherries and blueberries. There's a cherry bush. I didn't know there was a cherry bush. There is. So herbs became my decorative flowers, and everything that was just there to be pretty became functional and was actually still really pretty. You know, it just built. Mm. And that was working for me. I learned how to make applesauce. I started dabbling in water bath canning. I started making soap. Then my husband said, what if, you know, we're doing really well with the produce. What if we do eggs? And I was like, I don't like chickens because I just, they freak me out. I'm sorry. I know there's so many chicken lovers, but they do. They just freak me out. And he's like, well, how about we do ducks? And I said, can you do duck eggs? And he's like, yeah, why not? So Whole Foods sold single duck eggs. So we went and got a couple, we sampled them and we're like, okay, we could do ducks. It just kept going from there. There were sugar maple trees. So I learned to tap them and boil sap down into syrup. And then it was about that point that Santa Claus brought goats for my youngest son for Christmas. The neighbors had a fit. They were not okay with it. And we were pushing our limits. And the city basically said, get rid of what you're doing here. Get rid of the goats, the ducks, all this, or get out. And we were like, then we're getting out because this is what we want to do.
Oh, wow.
So we found the property we're at now, 6 acres in central New Jersey. And I mean, we have way more wildlife here than I ever did in Minnesota. We've got black bear, bobcat, supposed mountain lion, you know, there's foxes, there's coyote, there's all kinds of things out here. And I've got Clydesdale horses. I taught myself how to plow and we got the bees. We have 40 birds now and it's just hit the ground running. I love it all. I'm so passionate about it all. I love learning it. I love experiencing it and I love sharing it. Yeah. And so that's why I started writing articles for some magazines. And then I was blessed to have the opportunity to do some books. And it's just, I think this is what I'm meant to be doing because it keeps snowballing effortlessly. And I'm so grateful and appreciative of that.
It's a very simple yet a very beautiful story. All of
Thank
it.
You.
Just how this like passion kept coming out of you, how you kept learning, how you were brave enough to make that leap. You know, it's pretty ballsy to grow a small animal farm when you know your neighbors are going to get pissed at you. You know, like it's not, it's no small thing. You know, now you have more acreage and so it's different, but in a small environment like that, you know, your neighbors are probably like, who are these freaks? You know, what are they doing?
Totally. Absolutely. Hated us.
But yeah. And to step out on that limb, right. And really make it your whole life. And then it blooms into this, you know, whole brand and platform that becomes more than you probably could have imagined when you started. And I noticed one thing about you, your platform, your podcast, you in particular, you know, I follow you on Instagram, et cetera. is you are very focused on teaching.
Thank you.
A lot of people, which I like, because I think I'm kind of like that a little bit too. It's just about inspiration, which is needed. Like, we need just to be inspired, but then you're just very, if you want to know how to treat a sickness that your doc has, Angela has the answer for you. She'll have a blog post about it, or she'll have a podcast episode about it. And is that something that you've kind of always had in you, that teaching, or are you just so passionate that you want to like get all these details out there for people?
I mean, I guess I've always been a teacher in some capacity. I've taught dance classes. I was captain of teams when I was younger and played sports. I was always in some sort of a leadership role, I guess. Yeah. When it comes to the educational piece now, I think it's because a lot of this comes back to, yes, growing fresh local ingredients and living in alignment with the seasons, but that has a lot to do with also being eco-friendly. And I think when it comes to the rat race, there's so many people that are getting environmentally anxious and stressed about all of the bad news about what's happening to the planet, or, you know, people are frustrated about those recalls we talked about before, and they don't know what to do. Mm. They just are so burnt out on the 9 to 5. What else can I do? All of these things, all this lifestyle was native to everyone at some point in time, years and years ago. Everyone had a homestead. That's how they lived. And what they couldn't grow or produce, they bartered for. So this is not a strange or alien form of living by any means. I think my passion when it comes to education is just making folks realize and helping them to realize this is accessible. You can do this. I did not go to school for this. Totally self-taught. And so many homesteaders and farmers want to share and feel just as passionate and are willing to help teach. And it's just a really beautiful community that really just, it's grassroots. And it's so cool. It's such a cool movement to see gaining some traction, more and more people gaining interest, more and more people diving into it.
Yeah, I would say that I have met some of the nicest people I have ever met this season recording this theme of home. And that also even when we stop recording, I've like become friends. I mean, I often maintain relationships with my guests, but this season, I don't know. It's just very different. And I think it's because of the spirit of the guests. I think that they have a genuine want to help, want to be supportive, and want to be like part of a community. So it's not this kind of like competition. You're interviewing a social media influencer from Manhattan who's a fashion blogger. Not saying those people can't be nice, but right, it's different work. It's a different approach. I really find that they're so willing to kind of answer any questions I have, like weeks later and things like that. It's really been wonderful. And I'm so thrilled to be able to introduce my audience to all of you. Why do you think that there's such an interest in this now? And I'm assuming you teach the things you teach because people want to know, right? I'm assuming they ask you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, there are only so many times that I can write Instagram post about introducing a guardian goose to your duck flock, but I save them. Thank God Instagram invented that section where it's called guides or whatever. And you can filter the post by category.
Because you get that many questions about it.
Oh, constant.
It's insane. Yeah. Like I would never think, who would think that?
I know.
It's so specific.
So specific. And I wouldn't think that well, now that I know homesteaders though on Instagram and I have a relationship, I guess I definitely do ask people, for help with certain things, but that would not be ever in my dreams. My number one go-to resource, if I was starting to homestead, would be let me look on Instagram and see what people are doing. Yeah. But there is a need for answers, and there's so much bad information out there, whether it be Instagram or a blog or a YouTube video, there's a lot of bad information. And so it's hard to really know sort of what you're getting. And I think that's where the podcast came in, where I had the idea for that. And I reached out to my co-hosts and I said, look, we're all getting lots of questions. We're all big into educating. The same questions are on repeat here. What's another way that we can sort of get information to people without having them read? Because people are busy. People don't want to sit and read posts all the time. They like the picture and they move on, right? I do the same thing. So We would, yes, of course, educate in our captions and Instagram stories, but a lot of it also was about finding a different way to connect people with information. And that's where the podcast came in. That's why I do a few YouTube videos every now and then. But that was what was great about the opportunity with the Little Homesteader book series is they already had, the publisher already had the idea in mind. And they said, look, we need somebody who's eco-friendly, who's a homesteader, and we want this to be broken down into four seasons. Can you help us create a series that's engaging for kids, but interesting for adults that teaches people how to homestead? And I was like, I'm your girl. I want to do this. Yes, yeah. Please. And I'm just so thrilled. And they turned out great. I'm so excited about it.
This is your children's series, and do you teach like crafts, et cetera, like you in the book, so that kids can work with the seasons, interact with them, the seasons?
They can, but there's recipes in there. I mean, it'll teach you how to tap a tree. It'll teach you how to give ducklings and goslings a bath properly. But the catch is, what was really tricky about writing the books is it had to reach an audience that was just as interested in homesteading if they lived in a New York City high rise as if they did live out in English countryside, because this is the US, the UK, New Zealand, and Australia. So there is a need for it. There is a need. There's people just wanting to reconnect. And, you know, we talked about the rat race before, and I think, sure, that's for the work portion of it, for what you want to do for your day-to-day life. But for the people who are perfectly happy in their jobs, they just want access to real food, or they just want access to seeing livestock or seeing animals. You know, you can still live in New York City and still go to a farmer's market or belong to a CSA and be able to eat locally. I think it's really just about connecting and tangibility and trying to connect people with something that maybe has been a little bit out of touch for a while.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the world is so mind dominated and technologically driven. And I mean, I write about this a lot. I talk about this a lot. I post about it a lot because I think about it a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, but I feel that so many of us are just wondering, like, what is it to be human anymore? You know, I mean, is this it? You know, like, we go to work, we come home, right. We're working for somebody else most of the time, maybe for people we don't believe in, companies we don't believe in, companies who will let you go at the drop of a hat if they want to sell their company, right? I mean, your livelihood, et cetera, is gone.
Yeah.
And companies, if I may, that are also like increasingly controlling you through their policies, whatever, you know, however you want to take that, what you can say, what you can do, what you have to do. And then you come home and maybe you eat something that you pick up on the way home, and then you sit on the couch and you watch Netflix and you just keep doing that. And it's just, is this it? Is this life? We know inside of us, right? Our souls, our spirits know this can't be all of it.
Exactly. And that is something I struggled with so much in trying to figure out, look, I built this graphic and website design business for a decade, and this is not making me happy. I don't want to look at my computer screen and see how warm it was outside today and whether or not it was sunny because I'm sitting in a cubicle. I do not want that. I want to go outside and know what it felt like today. I want to know where the sun is at noon. I mean, there's just behind the computer, behind the screen, there's just so much screen time and not enough nature time. And it just was not working with me anymore. Every inch of me was just wanting to get out from behind a computer.
So it's interesting because we had to reschedule this once, which is totally normal. It happens. And the timing of these interviews sometimes is interesting for me because I'm you on the airplane going to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at right now. I wasn't sure if I was going to jump into this, but it keeps coming up. I keep feeling it.
Yeah.
And I've had many jobs. I've had, you know, long career in the past 15, 20 years, whatever it is. And my last one, the latest one, is very demanding, very stressful. Nothing that I ever wanted to really do with my life. I kind of just fell into it. And it's one of these positions that, you know, from the outside, like, I wonder if you felt this way when you told your family, you know, I'm not going to be this like high powered, successful, you know, ad agency anymore. I'm going to garden and farm.
Yeah. Right.
You know, from the outside, it's like a pinnacle job, right? People want it. Your family's proud of it. You're crazy if you leave it. I mean, the money's decent. It's great benefits. And so you kind of stay, but the years are ticking by and you're like, I'm not living a life that is mine. I'm living another life.
Yeah.
Right. And then on the side, I'm trying to live the life that I want.
Yes. And you're stuck in the middle.
And you're stuck in the middle and you're wondering why you're always exhausted and you feel like you're always treading water.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about how you made that leap and how people can kind of be brave enough to like swipe all those voices out of their heads or push them aside that say, you know, basically like what you decided to do is not life. Like that's a dream. Like, you know, like, oh, mm-hmm. Angela must be nice. You get to stay home all day and farm. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Am I the only one who hears that voice? Okay.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. If you could just talk about asking for a friend, if you could just talk about that.
Asking for a friend. Okay. Tell your friend. No. So, I mean, I don't want to get too inspirational cat poster, right? Because people are like, this isn't tangible, but here's the thing. I knew I wasn't happy. We looked at our finances. I was very fortunate to be in a position where my husband had a steady paycheck. So I could start weaning my clients off. And I did it. I didn't just like drop the hammer, you know, and say, I'm not going to bring in any income anymore. Because you have to be honest, homesteading rarely does it bring in an income on its own. So that's why I do writing now. That's why I, you know, do the books and that sort of thing, is because it's a way that I can still financially contribute. So if you have something like that can work in alignment with the homesteading, obviously that helps to ease the burden of just saying we're cutting off a source of income.
Sure.
But if you look at the bigger whole for me, it's what you value. And for me, I do not place success on income, fancy cars, and a big house. I place success on my happiness. I don't want my children to remember me working all the time. I want my children to remember me being happy and giving them experiences where we're outdoors together picking dandelions. Like, it sounds like hopes and rainbows and dreams, but that's what I want. And seeing them happy, that's what makes me happy. So I took the jump and started weaning off those clients, because you have to start somewhere. And you can tread the water, tell your friend, you can tread the water. you can tread the water for as long as you need to, until eventually you're ready to jump.
Yeah.
It's different for everyone.
It is. And I mean, I'm currently in a situation where I feel like life has forced me to face it, you know, like a series of events have happened, not to be too cryptic, but I mean, I'm also just, I don't want it to be about me, but you know, I also think, let me put it this way. I also think what you're saying could be also said this way, which is we can also ignore our real nature and our passions and what we're really supposed to do. Like you said before, this is what I'm meant to do. Looking at you, I could feel that. And I think we can ignore that only for so long. And then, you know, one of several things can happen. One is life, God pushes you, makes the circumstances change, pushes you out, takes it away from you, whatever it is, so that now you're at a crossroads and you have to choose. Or you keep ignoring, and like you get sick, mentally sick, physically sick, spiritually sick, your relationships suffer.
Yep.
And that happens to millions of people constantly.
Right.
I think there is that when you're ready. Like you seemed like you were ready and you had a plan. And then in my situation where, well, here I am now, what will I do? Basically, you know, will I go through door number one, which is more of the same, because there's that, like, you know, there's that panic and those voices of like, have to have the 9 to 5, have to have that coming in, or will I take the opportunity to go in a direction I've always want it to go fully.
Right.
And be brave. So, right. You know, we all kind of get there, but
we get there. And it's sad that so many people don't get to experience this lifestyle until they're retired. I mean, how many people do you hear that retire and they're like, now I can get a little hobby farm, exactly, or now I'll have more time for homesteading activities or skills. Yeah, but I don't want to wait and learn to do XYZ till I'm retired. I'm going to be arthritic. I know it, right. You know, and it's right. Just, I don't want my bones and joints to hurt when I'm trying to garden. I want to do it now while I have the energy for it.
100%. And you know, I've been saying to my husband recently, you know, I'm like, I struggle with this. I'm the daughter of immigrants, and I struggle with this kind of like immigrant, like work ethic, but slash idea that, you know, you do need to be successful, and success mm-hmm. looks a certain way. Right. And it's, this is not mm-hmm. like hating on my parents. They're always pretty like, do what you love, et cetera, to an extent. Sure. Right. But there's also this idea of, you know, we were illiterate, we were poor, we came here to give you a different life. And that life looks like become doctors, become lawyers, you know.
It's the American dream.
It's the American dream. And you get it. Well, really in the end, you know, what they want is they want you not to suffer
right.
the way they suffered. But then what happens is you end up suffering in another way. So you're not suffering financially and so on. You're eating, but it's a different kind of suffering. And I've been talking to my husband about like hearing those voices, and he'll remind me, he'll say, do you think that they came here though and sacrificed all that so that you could be miserable? I mean, is that why they did right. it? You know, right. it's something that's really important to remember.
I mean, I'm not afraid to share it at all. There was a weekend I did check myself into the hospital because I was feeling suicidal. Mm. And that was during my postpartum depression. And it was because I was forcing myself to fit in a box that didn't work for me. And I was so burnt out, not sleeping. You know, you're a mom to a baby, you've moved away from all your friends and family. So you're trying to go at this, you know, first baby alone, you know, just my husband and I. And at the same time, I'm trying to fill my client deadlines as if I'd never had a child, and I'm just going on, and it does not work. It didn't work, at least not for me. And it came to a point where something had to change. That's when we got serious about looking at our finances. And it was absolutely the push that I needed, so that when we did get on that plane just a couple of weeks later, where I could say, let's do this. Can we make this switch for me? And he, you know, thankfully my husband was like, yes, absolutely. Let's do it. Having that support, without that support, I don't know where I'd be right now. I honestly don't know. If he had said, no, you cannot switch into this homesteading lifestyle, who knows what I would be doing, or if I'd even still be here, how long could I handle that pressure for? I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes it drives me a little crazy, honestly, that I don't financially contribute as much as I used to when I had the full-time design gig. Oh my God, but I gain so much more now out of my life, my day-to-day life.
I mean, I imagine so does your husband from your transition. You know, there's an element of, you know, like happy wife, happy life. Right. So maybe it's not, right. It's not financial, but what you're bringing into your home, I mean, energetically, with your happiness, with your joy, with your passion, and also like literally like the food, the cooking, the preserving, the experiences. That's a big one. When you said that, that really clicked for me, because I, you know, we have a 2-year-old, and it's a cliche, but everything really does change when you have that baby. And you do look at you do look at the world with different eyes, because what is, you know, you're always thinking like, what is he going to remember? What is he going to see? Right. What is going to be, I know I think about my upbringing all the time. I think about my parents all the time and what they gave me and my siblings, and experiences is such a big deal. And we are, you know, all of this that I'm kind of talking about, these changes being at a crossroad, it also includes that, you know, like what kind of life do we want to live, and how do we want, right? How do we want our son? What do we want him surrounded by? Do you want him surrounded by mommy running out on, you know, not getting home till 11 PM on Wednesday night, 'cause she had an event to go to, or right, being gone on Saturday, 'cause she has another event to go to, just so we, you know, or do we want to like be in the mountains and go for walks?
Right. But there's so much to be said too for people that do live that lifestyle, that busy lifestyle, the events on Friday nights and Saturday nights, and that makes them happy. And I don't want people listening to this to think that I'm shunning the non-stay-at-home moms, right? Because I think that women, parents, men, women, whoever, you need your own life outside of raising children. You need your own hobbies. You need your own interests. I think that just brings more to the table, and your child needs to see you be happy, right, whatever that looks like, 100%. Whatever job you're in. Yeah. For me, the juggling it was too much.
Right. And and I agree with you. I mean, if you're happy, and I know from work, especially, I know several moms who they love it. Like, this is what they want to do. And this is their career. And thankfully they have some support. What I want for my life is what you feel. Right. And I would never, I would never want you to feel the way I feel by staying home with your kids. Right. If that would make you feel like the way I feel, I don't want that for you. So it's a good, thank you for clearing that up, but 100%. But for people like you and I, and my hunch is most of my listeners, which is why I'm doing this season, is the juggling and the disconnection, the feeling like you're disconnected from, your ancestors, your heritage, that kind of old world way of life is real. It's a real feeling. And I wanted to talk about it so they can understand, they're not alone.
Yeah.
We all have different ways we get there. Yeah,
absolutely.
So you really now live, do your children go to school or do you homeschool them?
They go to school.
They go to school. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. So you're still really living like a very home-centered life. And I'm wondering, how that has changed your life. And also, I feel like this kind of home-centered life is, again, like old school and old world. And once upon a time, everybody lived that way, right? You didn't have cars that could, drive you so far away, airplanes, all that. And just how it's like changed your life and also like the benefits of it.
Oh, it's a good question. So the life I live now, in some ways it's a curse and in some ways it's a blessing. It's hard to eat out at restaurants, right? Because we cook so much and we do have the opportunity to have access to so much homegrown ingredients, so much homegrown food. And I love when my kids want to help me cook or my husband is at the kitchen counter helping me. And mealtime is an experience, which comes from my heritage, right? That's something that we all did together.
Right.
So I love that. It has sort of diminished the glossiness of just picking up takeout or going out to restaurants, because truly there's nothing like eating at home now.
I really understand that. I really,
do you?
Yeah, I resonate with that a lot. It's getting, and it keeps getting harder and harder. I can only go to certain places. Indecision when you like, maybe you don't have time to cook. I'm like, I don't want to order from anywhere. It's not real food.
I know.
Like, what are we going to do? I totally understand.
Yep. Yes. But then it's, in other ways, it's a blessing and a curse too, because let's take Halloween. We just had Halloween. I love to grow pumpkins. We have a massive pumpkin patch. My kids don't want to go out to a pumpkin patch and pick pumpkins, and I remember looking forward to that so much with my family or my school field trips when I was a kid. They are not into it. They're over it. And so for them, the pumpkin patch is just such an ordinary, mundane task that now they feel they have to do when they go with schools. But we get to go in our backyard and pick our own pumpkins. And it's amazing. Yeah,
absolutely. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you. Yeah, it's not a big deal to them. It's
not a big deal.
Yeah, it's everyday.
But I think one thing that I notice that's a little bit different for our family as a whole, as a unit, is we don't necessarily have to carve out time to spend together. So I look at some other families, not all of them, but some other families where they really have to make an effort to make sure Friday night is family night or something like that.
Yeah.
We're together all the time and we're playing games and we're talking at meal times and my kids are outside with me while I'm working and we see each other all the time. Do we still do special activities like family movie night? Sure, we do. Absolutely. But we're not trying to prioritize, uninterrupted minutes together. It's just part of our daily life now. Yeah, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, it is a really beautiful thing. And I think at the heart of my own transition right now, it's a lot of what my husband and I are talking about. You know, we realize like we really want to have that kind of life. And if there's a way to do it, mm-hmm. we should really do everything we can to have it, because, you know, this is so fleeting. I mean, not just yes. life, although life is obviously, but absolutely. You know, your babies, like they grow so quickly. You'll just miss it. And I know, and I know that for some people it's just the way it has to be. And my heart mm-hmm. goes out. I know that feeling, and it's very, yeah. it's very tearing. Like it's just this kind of stress, you know, it can be. It's also like an old fashioned way of living where, you know, you were mm-hmm. always with your family and around. I know for some people that sounds nuts, but for some families it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
I totally get that. Yeah.
So, I do wish that we just had more like multi-generational living. I would love, honestly, totally 100%. They don't believe me when I say this. I would love if they would come live here. Are you kidding? My dad is just so hands-on, like wants to be fixing things. He'd be great farmhand. He would be awesome here. My mom's an excellent cook. You know, she loves to spend time with the kids. I am constantly begging them. We have a bedroom for you. Come out and live with us. I would love that. And I get that, you know, that I understand why so many families from previous times and even from other cultures now, why they did that. It's yeah. it's not sustainable to like,
oh my gosh, you're speaking
do
my
it
language.
On your own.
You
it's
are
not
speaking
sustainable.
My language. And you said before, you know, you kind of said it in passing when you had your first baby, you were trying to work mm-hmm. and you guys were doing it on your own with no one around. And that was what went through my yeah. head when you said that. It's not sustainable. And I'm sorry, but it's not the way it's supposed to be. It's just not.
No.
And that's
no.
it. And you can right. write me letters and give me a hard time about it, but I'm not, this is my hill. Because I mean, me and my husband have talked a lot about, should we move out of New York? Should we go somewhere else? You know, there's so much going on yeah. in the world and all that. And it's very expensive here, like a million reasons. And I cannot leave my family. I just, yeah. my mother helps out so much. My sister yeah. helps out so much. I don't think I can do it. So, you know, so I say to him, so we'll have whatever, less taxes or, you know, more, or we'll go to Florida and we'll have more income, right? That's not taxed, but then like we're by ourselves and like, we won't have anyone to help us. And that is a whole other stress. So that lifestyle, and of course, as Italian Americans, and that's very traditional. I know people mm-hmm. still who, are multi-generational, mother's 90, the daughter's 60, and they're still living together.
Right.
And it's speaking of, you know, seasons and like a cycle of life, that's the way it was supposed to be. Your parents raised you, your parents got older, you took care of them in a sense, they weren't alone. You went to work, they stayed home, right? They took that load off your shoulders. Maybe your mother cooked for you while you were at work. So when you came yep. home, right? Everybody had a hot meal. Maybe they helped with the kids. You know, it's all this like cycle of life stuff that we're losing or we've lost. And it's stressful.
I know, and I ask myself, like, for what? Why do we isolate ourselves so much? And why do we live such a life of convenience? It's so that we can work more. It's, you know,
right.
you can work more. And
it's
that doesn't
exactly
make
right.
sense.
It doesn't. We thought like convenience was going to free up time for something. I don't know what, like something that was going to change our lives, but really we just work more. I mean, we just, mm-hmm. we're on our phones more working. We're on our mm-hmm. computers more working. We're commuting further. It's just,
yes.
it's this ongoing thing. This is a big topic for me. You know, I just as a quick wrap up to that, when I was pregnant, I didn't read too many books because I am a big reader like you as well, but I don't know why with this topic, I just thought if I read too much, I'm going to be like a wreck. You know, I don't want to know yeah. all the things that could happen or go wrong. I almost just wanted like a little primer on every topic and I was done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did get one book because I was really focusing on the, what they call the fourth trimester now, which is something that we don't really talk about. Just, you know, after you have your baby, what happens to you then, right? Everyone has this assumption that you just, the baby comes out and then you're fine, but you're not
yeah.
as you
no.
clearly experienced. Right.
Right.
And, I got this book. I don't even remember the title right now, but I got as far as the introduction, and it was about this topic. I was so excited to read it. And she just, the writer was talking about how she had moved out of the country, had the baby. Her father of the baby was like living somewhere else. And she thought that it would be fine for her to have a newborn by herself in an apartment in a country that she was foreign to her. And she didn't really speak the language. And oh, I just thought, this is what's wrong with a lot right now, that you even could have that mentality. I felt my heart went out to her. You know, you could even have that mentality that lets you think that that's doable. Mm-hmm. is a real failure of society, in my opinion.
No, I think that's fair. It's ironic because we're talking about, you know, homesteading and self-sufficiency, and we're talking about self-reliance. But in a way, when you look at how our modern day society is set up, we want people to be isolated, self-sufficient,
right?
So that they can work. They work these 9-to-5s. They work these jobs. They complete their tasks. They complete their to-do lists. And then for some reason, the idea of having tangible tasks like food preservation and gardening and those self-sufficient ideas seem so foreign and so daunting and intimidating.
Yeah.
But really, we're just at the other end of the spectrum as a whole. You know, we're just self-sufficient in a different way. We're isolated in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've removed our connection from nature. And then what's left, really?
Well, the self-sufficiency, I think, is more, you know, this is like a sociological idea. The more affluent a society becomes, the more isolated people become. Because with affluence, you don't feel like you need each other anymore. You know?
True.
I have a bigger house. I have a nice car. I'm taking care of my own quote family, you know, meaning like your immediate nuclear family. But back in the day, I mean, even me growing up, we still do a large extended community of Italian Americans and Italian immigrants who all needed each other. They knew they needed each other to whether it was doing these preserves, like, you know, jarring, canning, but also to move ahead in life. So, you know, you still have that. It's almost like, I don't want to say money's evil, but money does, used in the wrong way, it changes us. And the first thing that changes is this idea of community. So like self-sufficient and community, I don't know, are two different things. And I think people like you and I want to be self-sufficient because I want to be able to take care of my family and my community that I want to be a part of.
Yeah. That
is a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, we can meet our produce needs. We grow our own food, but we also donate to the food pantry because we realize there's people who need it.
There you go. Yep. Well said. Right? And you use the things that you cook to bring people to your table.
Yes.
Because what brings people together better than good food? I mean, nothing.
Nothing.
that's everything. That's the whole thing, people. So,
yes.
Angela, we've been talking for about an hour now, and I do want to wrap up. I know you're very busy, but I want to just, as we close, mention your cookbook, the Harvest Table Cookbook. And I just wanted you to talk just for a second about that. I'll link, of course, to your Little Homesteader series and your podcast, but this is a pretty cool cookbook. You're the co-author of it.
Yes.
And just tell us a little bit about it. So I think
thank you. Okay, so The Harvest Table is a cookbook that I co-wrote with Annette Thurman, also an Instagram homesteader. Her account is Azure Farm. And she's located down in Georgia. I'm in central New Jersey. But we both are very unique in that we're plant-based homesteaders. We both don't process our animals for food. So we thought, you know what, there's something very accessible for people in that, because a lot of people can grow vegetables or fruit in pots, they can grow them in raised beds, they can grow them in the ground. So what if we create a cookbook based on the four seasons, and we show you that you can source fresh ingredients, whether it's from your own pots or your own garden or from a CSA or a farmer's market, and you can truly eat local year round. So all of the recipes in the cookbook are plant-based, based on spring, summer, winter, and fall. And then the other thing that's really cool is for those who want to take it a step further beyond just sourcing local ingredients is there's a homestead tip with every single recipe. So Annette had a recipe for a tomato tart. Well, we'll give you a little tip on how to know when your tomatoes are ready to harvest, or maybe how to preserve them. So it creates a more of a resource situation than just a cookbook. We also give the checklist by season for what we do on our homesteads, how we care for our animals, for our vegetable and flower gardens, regardless of the time of year. So you can find an accessible, approachable way to sort of get into the mindset of a homesteader and this lifestyle.
That sounds right in line with your you.
Thank you.
Bring me back to what we talked about earlier, to teaching and really wanting to share the information. And it's a beautiful book. I'll link to that as well. And hopefully everyone will pick up a copy. I want to thank you so much.
That.
Of course. And thank you so much for giving me your time and just being such a wonderful guest. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it so much. We had one of the most heartfelt conversations I think I've ever had as a guest on a podcast. So thank you for that and for having me. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for joining Angela and I for what I hope you found to be a wonderful conversation. Just a reminder, you can find me on Instagram at Dolores_Alfieri_Taranto. You can learn more about me as well as this show by visiting bellafigurapodcast.com. That's bellafigurapodcast.com. Here's to knowing your roots and cultivating a beautiful life from their power.